Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Southern Fried Podcast, a production of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I'm Rex Nelson, Democrat Gazette senior editor, and it is indeed a thrill to have back because we've had him at least a couple of times before, but one of my favorite people in our state, Dean Peter McKeith of the Fay Jones School of Architecture on the campus of the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. Dean, thank you for making the trip to Little Rock today. I always enjoy these conversations.
Thank you so much, Rex. And on behalf of the Fay Jones School of Architecture and Design, as I said earlier, I'm always happy to encounter things that are Southern and fried.
There we go. We're not going to fry you today, but we are going to talk not only architecture, but timber as we have in the past, because you recently dedicated the Anthony Timberland Center for Design and Materials Innovation. I mean, it is really a landmark center for the future of our state, where forestry plays such an important role. We've talked about it on past shows, but I don't take for granted that anybody listened to any past shows. I know we've got new listeners here. So let's start. Why don't you give us a kind of a one-on-one on what the Anthony Timberland Center is and what you will hope it will accomplish in the decades to come.
Well, we opened, yes, a fantastic new facility, the Anthony Timberland Center, on Friday, August 29th. This is, in fact, a culmination of what I would say is almost a decade-long effort to bring the project into design and construction and into opening, but it is the centerpiece of a much larger initiative for our school. So if it's possible to say that architecture is at one and the same time that which is built, but also that which is envisioned, that which is important for our economy, for our environment, for the education of our students and citizens of the state, that's what the Anthony Timberland Center ideally should be understood as. First and foremost, as a construction at the corner of Martin Luther King Boulevard and Leroy Pond Avenue on the south side of Fayetteville, it is, I will say, a landmark.
Landmark structure on one of the busiest streets in the state, on top of that. So a lot of people are going
to
see it.
It has to be said that when people say, what are you working on as a school? And all I have to say is, well, there's a building on MLK. And they go, ah, I know. But what it is to the furthest extent possible, a demonstration of the vitality of Arkansas's forest economy. And we are all too aware and have been very public as a school and as a university in Fayetteville to understand our responsibilities to the entirety of the state of Arkansas, and in particular to the fortunes of our economy and the overall health of the state's environmental resources, which we are so rich in, which is why, of course, we're the natural state.
Exactly.
But what we have felt that we could do as a university and certainly as a school of architecture and design is to work through research, through development, through outreach, through promotion, through education, to really benefit the entirety of a state, benefit the forest economy, benefit that environment, and in a sense, extend this, what I will say is the legacy of Fay Jones himself and his work into this 21st century.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things I love from the first, and you hit on this just a little bit, was your broader vision. We've done one of these podcasts where you have set in, at your suggestion, with people from the University of Arkansas at Monticello, part of the UA system, of course, where our only school of forestry is. But talk about your vision of how a school of architecture and design can play, and you touched on it again, a greater role in improving the economy of a whole state, because that was not something I would have thought of before you got here, of a school of architecture that would play that role and work hand in hand with somebody like a UAM.
I appreciate the question, because it, in fact, is a question which I continually ask myself on a daily basis. It's a question I pose to our faculty and our students, our staff. I think it's the right question, which is to say, how can a school of architecture and design be of value to a state, in this case, which is 57-58% covered in forest?
Mm-hmm.
This is one way, that, and a very big way, in which we're addressing that question. We're asking other questions as a school as well. How can a school of architecture and design address the healthcare and overall even aging population needs of the state? How can we address as a school the housing needs of our immediate region, but certainly in many places across the state, affordable housing needs? How can we address issues such as preservation design, which runs all the way from the barns of the countryside all the way to the Victorian mansions, not so far from where we're sitting right now? How can we help build stronger, safer, more resilient communities altogether? These are questions which we began asking as a school more than a decade ago, and I arrived in July of 2014, because we felt that the school had achieved already then a level of substance and a level of excellence in its basic education that we could, from that platform, begin to understand how we could impact truly people's lives. And I say this, our first task as a school is to prepare the students who come to us for successful lives, successful careers in the professional disciplines that we and the degrees that we provide. But beyond that, I think we have always a larger goal, and must have in a way a larger mission, which is how can we as a school move beyond just education into impact out into the communities of the state. These have been really rewarding years of pursuing those goals. And the Anthony Timberland Center is certainly one very big manifestation of that. This is a responsibility that we take seriously as a school and as a university, as a land-grant university, and so I would say as a land-grant school. How can we, again, benefit the citizens of the state? Architecture should not be seen as a luxury, should not be seen as a premium that you pay. It should actually be understood as good design is available for everybody, thoughtful design, and this too is where we take this responsibility to be more, in a way, than a school providing professional degrees, but a school providing direct service and direct value across the state. Second part of your question,
yes, is
how does this benefit, in particular, the forest economy? Well, here's where my knowledge is really gained through the friendships and collegiality with our colleagues at the School of Forestry and Natural Resources at UAM. And here I want to single out Mike Blazier, with whom I've sat here before, and Matt Pelkey, with whom I've sat here before, and all of their colleagues for the great work they're doing. They've been looking at the forest economy of Arkansas for a long time, and now they're looking, of course, at the forest health,
right,
through a newly instituted research center there. What I have learned from them is that the Arkansas forests are essentially healthy, but to the point where they are becoming too dense, and that they're...
We're growing timber at twice the rate we're harvesting it right
absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. And so on the one hand, this surplus is dangerous and potentially can affect the health of the forests. But on the other hand, any economist might say the surplus is also opportunity. So I suppose the proposition which I have made up and down and east, west, north, and south is, can we, as a school of architecture and design, incentivize the use of, we'll call them, old forest products, dimension lumber, in new ways? Can we also assist in developing and implementing new forest products in new ways, to the extent that they would then benefit Arkansas's forest health and Arkansas's forest economy? This particularly goes to design and bringing, in a sense, wood back into the vocabulary of architects and designers in a much more expansive way than it has been for the last 30, 40 years. And then secondly, it goes to assisting those who are building the buildings, those who are engineering the buildings, to understand that wood can have now comparable value when they come to the task of building.
You hosted early in the year a major mass timber conference. Again, I don't want to take for granted what anybody may know or not. So, again, walk us through what mass timber is, how its increased use obviously would help the Arkansas economy, and where you see that going as we look at construction trends in America in the decades ahead.
Sure. Mass timber, again, for those who are still new to this, and there's many, many people who are, is not everyday dimension lumber. Mass timber is the use of dimension lumber in laminated ways. The most familiar understanding might be to many glue laminated timber, through which in this state we have manufactured before glue laminated columns and beams, the arching beams in the great halls of Crystal Bridges Museum up in Bentonville are of Arkansas manufacture. But there is also then a growing family of such engineered laminated material made of dimension lumber, cross-laminated timber, which is now manufactured here in Arkansas. Mercer Mass Timber in Conway is manufacturing both glue-laminated timber and cross-laminated timber. And cross-laminated timber, the abbreviation is CLT, is panelized. It can be produced on a large format press, and it is essentially taking 2x4s, 2x4s, 2x6s, 2x8s, and laminating them at perpendicular angles to each other in a panelized form that is not necessarily endless in dimension, but can in fact be used in slab formation, in panelized formation. And it's, again, a way of addressing some of the surplus that we have. It's also a way, we believe, of accelerating construction, of having a much safer work sites, for instance, and in many ways saving a lot of time in the use of it. And we've demonstrated this on our campus through, I think, remarkably foresighted and innovative leadership committing itself to a library annex building on campus in 2018, a residence hall on campus in 2020, the I-cubed-R research facility just opened earlier this year as well, also engaging those forms of mass timber. And now this is the fourth building on the Fayetteville campus that employs
mass timber. That's exciting. Yeah, that is exciting. And I'm going to get off of timber because I need to get to some other areas in a minute, but there's so many other developments going on. I was delighted to see national attention back in June when I picked up the Wall Street Journal, and here was the headline: America's top logger bets it can make money off of small crooked trees. And it was Arkansas-based story. It was about Weyerhaeuser's $500 million plant they've now broken ground on down in South Arkansas between Monticello and Warren, that will turn small trees once bound for paper mills into lumber. And I was happy to see that Arkansas was the place that was happening, not some other state.
Absolutely. And this is an immense expression of not just financial confidence in the state of Arkansas, but confidence in the fiber basket that we have. Weyerhaeuser Southern Regional Headquarters are here in the state,
yes,
in Hot Springs, but that's for the entire Southeast. So Weyerhaeuser sees value in our state relative to the rest of the country, and they're certainly a partner in what we're doing. You mentioned this new this product, the TimberStrand product that they've been working on. It's another form of laminate, so to speak. Instead of taking dimension lumber, this now takes the wood chips or the wood fibers and binds them together, which can be used vertically, horizontally, in columns, in beams, in panels as well. This is the market that's coming into being. And whereas it has real application already in speculative office building, or as we're showing on our campus, in academic and cultural buildings, of course, the real market for the use of wood in the United States is in the housing market. And yes, we know why immediately as we say that how dependent we are upon housing starts, upon the commodities market, upon the Federal Reserve rate, and so forth. But ever closer, we are edging ever closer to entering really into the U.S. housing market through the use of these mass timber products. And that's where you get true uptake, and that's where there's real profit.
I'm gonna change gears a little bit because there's several other areas I want to get into, as I said, in addition to timber. But I will mention that the Anthony Timberland Center is already receiving fantastic national and international architectural reviews, which has to please you. But I got to thinking while I was preparing for this show. For instance, last night I hosted an event at Jeannie Gang's new Arkansas Museum of Fine Arts here in Little Rock, which has received favorable reviews internationally. A month or two ago, I spent 2 days in Bentonville, and I did a hard hat tour of the expansion of Crystal Bridges, and then I did tours of both the Whole Health Institute and the Alice Walton School of Medicine, both of which, again, are receiving, the buildings themselves are receiving very positive reviews. It seems to me, and you can tell me if you're wrong, you're the expert, but it seems to me that for a state of just 3.1 million people, we're really punching above our weight class right now for nationally significant buildings from an architectural standpoint.
Yes, absolutely. And I would have said this if you didn't say it. It has been my position, and I'm not alone in this, that not only are we punching above our weight, I think we are punching to many people's great surprise, which I'm all too happy to address. But I think what we're indicating is that a small state with a real devotion or dedication to innovation, with a real devotion, dedication to doing things the right way, to valuing the resources and valuing the place where we are, can be of national and even international significance. This has been part of my emphasis as well for our school in alliance with the university. But it's also, I think, what many others are working on as well in Northwest Arkansas and in this city as well. The international attention that we're receiving is extraordinary, not because it's focused on Arkansas, but because it is so complementary. It is so validating, and it, I think, again, it elicits such surprise from people who really should not be, who really actually must be much better informed, that the centers of architecture are shifting, and the places in which good architecture and even great architecture is situated is shifting, and that more and more there is every reason to be looking here. We'll call it the Heartland, we'll call it Mississippi River Valley, call it what you will, the Ozark Plateau, that this is a place where great, even excellent world-class architecture exists. And we are now on the pilgrimage trail.
Yeah.
You have to believe that there is such a thing, that architecture aficionados are coming from all over to look at all of these buildings. And I'm regularly now hosting classes from around the country, faculty from around the country, architects from around the country, reporters from around the country, manufacturers from around the country, which is where it gets really interesting. World-class architecture has the ability to generate economic value. So it is, I think, a worthwhile investment. And at the same time, how do you even quantify the publicity, the promotional value, when the word Arkansas is being said
absolutely
everywhere across the country?
And there are two pieces to this. One, I mentioned, Gene Gang's work here in Little Rock, which will continue with an expansion of the Clinton Center right down the world. So we're attracting world-class architects. But also some of this work is being done by Arkansas-based architects, a Marlon Blackwell, a Reese Rowland, that are right here in Arkansas.
Indeed. And of course, we can really, I think, take great pride in much of the homegrown quality of this. Again, maybe it's to everyone's great surprise. How does a state this small or this often overlooked produce this kind of activity? Well, Faye Jones, you could say, at least sets one standard for us
really
all.
Really did.
And brought that kind of attention. And yet, what I often regard as the strongest or most sustaining legacy of Faye Jones was he never left Arkansas. He always understood that this was his strength, and he derived his ability to design and his ability to appeal to others through his designs by virtue of staying where he is and recognizing the value of that place. This is, I think, what we're seeing as well. So, I say this with all respect to Jeannie, as well as to the architects that we've worked with, Grafton Architects, on our building. They have come and done their research. They have done their homework. They have spent time here. They've immersed themselves here. They understand that they need to, in a sense, drink from the waters here, breathe the air, recognize the qualities of this place in order to make work that people will value. The citizens of Little Rock, the students and faculty of University of Arkansas, they need design work that is derived from that place. And that's what's so gratifying to me, too. We want to bring superb talent working alongside of already superb talent here. And we also want everyone to understand that this is a place-centered architecture derived from the strengths and attributes and qualities of this state.
You know, and I do want to mention here, because we've got listeners statewide, and it's not just Northwest corner in those cities. It's not just Little Rock, the state capital. I'll give you another example. This summer, I was very honored to be asked to be the speaker when they had the open house day for the new facility for Opera of the Ozarks outside of Eureka Springs. I mean, you're driving through the mountains there. And again, Arkansas Design, Wesley Walls project, and that just pops out. It's an amazing theater, and it's in rural Arkansas.
Indeed.
And a world-class facility.
And, of course, I want to tout the attributes of the architecture at Garvin Woodland Gardens.
Absolutely.
So heavily visited by many people from outside the state entirely, and they come, of course, for the beauties of the landscape, but they also come to rest a while in the architecture that's there by Faye Jones, by Moda Studio, by a number of other Arkansas architects altogether. So this is where, another agenda for us as a school, beyond the education of our students, beyond the outreach and impact that we want to have as a school on behalf of the state. The other agenda is, how can we keep, in a way, changing people's minds if necessary, but simply just promoting the good work that is happening in Arkansas further and further out, nationally as well as internationally. And this has been a whole set of other projects that we've done in parallel to the Anthony Timberland Center.
Now, we're talking about, I know I'm going to run out of time way too fast because there's so much I want to cover, but we're talking about these fantastic new facilities that are going up, world-class all over the state. But you also mentioned preservation. As you know, I love Arkansas history and write about Arkansas history a lot. And one thing that the school, I think, has always done well, and that's going back many years, is to help communities, even small communities, the smallest communities across Arkansas, with historic preservations, saving their downtowns, saving buildings, and that is another example. You mentioned this need for statewide outreach for the school to reach into all 75 counties. And that is another way you're certainly doing it, is helping communities across Arkansas.
It is, and it was one of the reasons why we have felt strongly to bring into being a concentration at the graduate level in preservation design. We have always had a very strong relationship with what is now understood as Preserve Arkansas, and can't sing the praises of that organization enough. Many of the founding members of Preserve Arkansas were part of the school's faculty way back when. But both through the emphasis on preservation design, and I would say through the work that our Community Design Center is doing, we really believe that we can play a role, if asked, to assist in the continuing vitality of small towns and communities, as well as maybe even revitalizing that. So we've done work in Pine Bluff, for instance. Mm-hmm. We're doing work in Arkadelphia. We're doing work... we've done work out in the Northeast, out in Wilson. This has been very important for our students, of course, many of whom are from Arkansas, to be able to say, well, I can actually be here and be of value. I can help the state continue to move forward by valuing its past. The preservation design component of what we're working on is also now extending into Cane Hill, this wonderful community out to the west.
Oh, amazing what's going on there.
We're just beginning a set of endeavors to help stabilize projects there, but also to look ahead together with the leadership as to how we can build upon that legacy. But this is, again, part, I would say, of what a good, maybe I would wager, a great school of architecture and design should be doing. And I think the preservation design, the community design, the housing design, and we're now reaching into health and wellness design, is all part and parcel of that responsibility.
All right, before I run out of time, I do want to, you just hit on housing, and I did want to hit on that. Northwest Arkansas continues to be, which is great for our entire Arkansas economy, one of the fastest growing areas of America. That leads, though, to concerns about affordable housing. Talk about the role architecture and design can play in affordable housing.
I would, again, wager a strong role, and a necessary, essential role, in the sense that it is, I think, incumbent upon us all to be, in the first place, understanding the complexities of that, of these situations, and what is understood as the crisis, so to speak, of affordable housing in Northwest Arkansas will be different, but of equivalent value to what was probably going to be situations emerging in and around Magnolia as the lithium industry grows, to what's occurring in and around Pine Bluff, as in fact there's a desire to redevelop and for people to live there. We're interested in all of those communities, but we're interested in looking at how we can, in particular, address the needs of people who might be making no more than $16 an hour. This is something at the lowest end of the income spectrum, which is a huge amount of people, but it's also where there's not a lot of profit in the for-profit, even non-profit housing market. As a school, we can take this on as a research subject and begin to think tangibly and productively, actually through the workshops that we have now at Anthony Timberland Center, to explore low-cost means of construction, using more wood, in fact, but also using potentially less skilled labor forces, because it's getting harder and harder, tragically, to find the high-skilled labor that we often need. We've asked our students to basically unpack a for-profit developer's pro forma and look at the financing formulas, look at the land costs, look at the construction costs, look at the labor and material costs, but especially to try to bring the cost of design that much further down, to have what we would call almost standardized variability, that for each individual deserves their own dignity in their built environment, but they may only be able to afford so much square footage at one particular point in their life. Can we set them up with that? Can we then provide them the means to add on to that into an affordable housing structure going forward?
I will wrap up here where I opened, and that is with the, since it is new, the Anthony Timberland Center. I know you recruit students across the country and around the world, frankly, and anybody interested in these things we're talking about, having that facility now, I would think would be a great thing that you could lay out on the table, along with the quality, of course, of your faculty and your staff, but to kids all over the world, saying the University of Arkansas is where you want to come and study these things.
That would be my hope. Again, we have a firm commitment to educating students here in Arkansas, but I think we're always better by having students coming to us from across the
region. Absolutely, because some of those are going to stay here, and that's intellectual capital we need in our state.
And it's true, we are seeing already this kind of uptick in interest. We already, of course, reside within this Vol Walker Hall, Stephen L. Anderson Design Center. This is a award-winning building that Marlon Blackwell and his team and Polk Stanley Wilcox and their team did for the school and university 2013. Mm-hmm. Now we have this new facility. So I could argue that we potentially have the best facilities in the country right now for a student of architecture and design.
That's exciting.
That's the invitation we make, but this is also indicative of the commitment that the university has made to our school and to the education of our students.
All right, so I'll close with this. Where do you see the school going, let's say, over the next 5 to 10 years, as far as its area of focus, what its outreach is, just your big picture, your vision of the years ahead?
Well, I don't want to commit too much because sometimes I'm accused of having too much vision, but I think...
no such thing, believe me.
Having set much in motion now, I think we're at a moment with a new facility, with the growth that we've experienced. Again, in 2014, we were 425 students. Now, 2025, we're 1,000 students. So we have good growth, but we're a healthy school, a prospering school, I think a really vibrant school. Where do we go next? I think we want to build on what we've done. We need to now activate the Anthony Timberland Center. We really need to demonstrate the value that we bring to the affordable housing market, demonstrate the value we bring into preservation design. We're, I hope, demonstrating already the value we're bringing to Arkansas's natural resources issues. I think the other area for us to be working on is health and wellness. And we could say all of these aspects, the built environment and the natural environment, are intrinsic to our own sense of who we are and our physical and mental health. This is the next horizon for all of us, I think, looking ahead into a world which certainly has real challenges to face in the quality of life that we're able to provide for everybody. That's where I would like to go to next. These are the conversations we're already having with people up in Northwest Arkansas, but people across the country. Is with all of this now in motion and accomplished, what can we be doing? Well, let's go into towards health and wellness in particular.
Dean Peter McKeith, I've said it before and I'll say it again. I'm glad you're here. You get me fired up about the future of Arkansas. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Much appreciated. Thank you for the opportunity.
And thank all of you for listening to another edition of the Southern Fried Podcast, a production of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette.